Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for January 22nd, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my full page column in each and every edition of the Torch newsletter. My most recent column was on the Impact Knockouts Championship and Mickie James winning it at their pay-per-view that we talked about right here last week with ProWrestling.net's John Moore. Joined me last week here on Wrestling Night in America to talk about that show, and I look at some potential contenders to take the title off of Mickie James and end her career, as the storyline goes, that she is in now. So check that out in the latest edition of the Torch newsletter, paper copy or PDF on pwtorch.com. And if you're not a member of the Torch, pwtorch.com/govip is where you can get all the information about what you get with a subscription and how to sign up. So today we're going to focus on the Royal Rumble. The Rumble is fast approaching. Next Saturday night is the Rumble from San Antonio, Texas. The Alamo Dome will play host to the Royal Rumble event. And just a reminder that we here at Wrestling Night in America, even though our home is Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, we go on the air for a special edition after WWE and AEW pay-per-views. So Saturday night, following the Royal Rumble, we'll be on the air taking your phone calls and emails about the Rumble event. So if it's too late for you on a Saturday night to call in, but you watch the Rumble, you can send us an email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to, you can call us up, 515-605-9345. Those are the numbers not only next Saturday night after the Rumble, but also for tonight and each and every Sunday night that we are on the air for Wrestling Night in America. Want to bring in my co-host right now for this episode, and it is someone we haven't heard from in a while here on Wrestling Night in America, but someone who I've done a number of audio shows with in my history with the Torch, and it is Benjamin Tucker. Ben, thanks for joining me here tonight. Welcome back.
Oh, man, you know, I just got locked inside my basement for the last, like, 3 years, but I finally found the key, and I'm out. I'm more than happy to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I looked back in my DMs, and I think the last time you were on Wrestling Night in America was 5 years ago, actually, in 2018.
Man.
So it's been a while, and you've been a long-time contributor to the Torch back then. You were writing for PWTorch.com. So for those who may be new listeners or new to the Torch, can you talk a little bit about your past at the Torch?
Man, so I've gone to a lot of wrestling events. In fact, I'll be at the Royal Rumble event this upcoming week. So I would send in a bunch of, like, you know, spoiler reports or photos or just, you know, things that you wouldn't normally see on TV or get brought up. I'd send over to the Torch. And so it ended up sprouting from there. You know, I'd write contributor articles reviewing various shows and such. My peak years were around the Hulk Hogan and TNA years, which took years off
classic.
My own life. but yeah, so and from there I went into, I guess, semi-retirement, which is I went to college for a while and settled down and moved a bunch of places. Now that I'm settled back down, you know, I'm starting to get the itch to talk wrestling again, because I've been watching silently and patiently, and the last 5 years have had a lot of ups, a lot of downs, and I think we're coming into this year's Royal Rumble with a WWE that has a lot to answer for, and I think that it behooves everyone to have a strong show, because I think the Royal Rumble pay-per-view in general has a lot to prove coming into 2023.
Yeah, this is. I'm glad to have you on this show, because it is a big preview show here, previewing the Royal Rumble, one of the marquee events on the calendar for WWE. But I actually want to talk first about some news that developed over the last few days. And thankfully, it has nothing to do with Vince McMahon, but instead it has to do with The Rock. Yes, for once.
Yes.
So WWE had been advertising a ceremony on Raw this coming Monday, you know, with the Samoan tribe, as it were, all in attendance, and basically to crown Roman Reigns once and for all the head of the table. And it seemed the perfect opportunity to be used as a vehicle to lead to The Rock and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Now, a few days ago, it came out that The Rock will not be doing WrestleMania, that he does not think he can get himself ready in time to have a main event style match. And not so coincidentally, a few days later, the Reigns segment was removed from advertising for Raw, and instead the trial of Sami Zayn is now being advertised for Monday Night Raw. So it seems that WWE is going to have to go in a different direction, which they've prepared for. You know, they did not put all of their creative eggs in the Rock basket for WrestleMania, so they did have a backup plan. But, you know, it's just, I think it would have been so great to have that segment and have all the Samoan elders there on Raw live. It's the 30th anniversary of Raw, so you're going to get a lot of people watching more so than usual. And then to have something happen where The Rock comes out to confront Roman Reigns, or maybe not even that. Maybe The Rock wasn't even going to show up anyway, but something happens that leads to really the first chapter in that build to The Rock, Roman Reigns, which I think would be a huge match for WrestleMania. And what I feel like this whole Roman Reigns storyline has been building toward, really. And now to not have that, to lose out on that storyline possibility at this moment in time, is a real downer for me. And I know there's people who are not thrilled about people like The Rock coming in and getting a big WrestleMania payday.
Right.
But creatively, I think that would have been the best. Now, you know, there's people who have loved what Sami Zayn has done and think that Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns is the better idea, both creatively and in the ring for WrestleMania. I'm not convinced that WWE sees that as a marquee WrestleMania match. I still think it's a possibility that Reigns does something with Cena or he does something with someone else in that WrestleMania match other than Sami Zayn. But certainly moving from the segment that was planned to something to do with Sami Zayn would lead some to believe that maybe Zayn could be in that slot at WrestleMania. So what do you think about, you know, are you disappointed that The Rock isn't going to be there to face Roman Reigns? And if not The Rock, who do you think it will be for Reigns at WrestleMania?
Right. So this is the big question, right? This is the big central question around the Royal Rumble. And I think that I would think the general consensus is that the real three people who could potentially challenge Roman at Mania are The Rock, Sami Zayn, and then Cody Rhodes. And then you could say that there's a real dark horse pick of Seth Rollins, you know, unfinished business from the Rumble. But at the same time, it doesn't really seem like he's in that spot. It seems like he's in the 1A compared to Roman, where he's the – it seems like Rollins is really in the former Dean Ambrose role, where if something happens to Roman, you can put Rollins in that position, but he's not going to stay there. So looking at the three options, I don't know if – I've been a person who wouldn't have been surprised from the beginning if they were planning on doing – Roman just wrestles on both nights, one against The Rock and one for the titles. I still don't think it's out of the question that Roman could defend a title on night one and then defend a second title on night two, because, you know, the Usos, their titles are now getting split further apart. I don't know if they're testing the waters, but you can tell that there's some sort of something that's happening there. And so I never thought that I thought that even if The Rock was going to win, it was going to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and didn't really think it was going to be for the title, because it's a match that doesn't need the belt, and it's a match that, frankly, is more exciting without the belt, because The Rock's not going to stay with the company, you know, past one or two additional dates, right? And it doesn't serve Roman to have him beat The Rock. So then you look at these other two options with Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is the reliable choice. Sami Zayn is the outside, is like the outsider choice, right? It's, you know, the voice of the voiceless type role. And I think that the issue they're running into is, I think that if Sami Zayn isn't slotted into a program with Roman that culminates in Mania, I think this is really the highest he can go. I think that down the line, you could put him in as a main event fixture, and you could also slot him in with Roman after he does lose the titles, because Roman's going to need to have something to do, right? But I feel like this is the perfect timing for Sami to win that. On the other hand, and the reason why I think that Roman's going to be facing Cody Rhodes is that as much as Sami Zayn would benefit a ton by winning the Rumble, I don't know of anyone who needs to win a single match more than Cody Rhodes needs to win this Rumble. I think if Cody Rhodes loses and then finds a back way in through like an elimination chamber or something, I think it kills him dead. And that's a lot of pressure to put on, but I feel like one of the big problems with Roman Reigns, you know, in 2015, 2016, as much as, you know, we were complaining about back in the day, but the biggest issue, I think, is they just never got behind him 100%. And that sounds ridiculous to say. The guy main evented like five WrestleManias in a row. But with John Cena, he won the title in 2005, and they ran with him. They ran with him until he got injured, and then as soon as he came back, they put the belt on him. Or he was injured and he'd be gone for a month, and then, you know, he'd get the belt immediately, or he would lose the title for like 3 weeks. Like, they kept with John Cena. I think one of the things that really damaged Roman Reigns is that they brought him to the dance, but he didn't quite win the title, but he made it to WrestleMania, but he lost, and it's this weird give and take. And I think if they do that with Cody Rhodes, where it's like, well, he did win the Rumble, but he's going to win the chamber, or he'll eke in through the back door. That's not what we want. Cody Rhodes is big 1980s classic babyface, you know, in his mind, and you know, visions of his father. Like, that's what he's trying to evoke. I think he needs this one strong match because, you know, if you look online, and of course the internet dictates everything, right? But I think for the average WWE viewer who didn't follow Cody Rhodes' journey, like, this is what the Rumble is made for. Because there are people who still look at him as, hey, isn't that the kid who tagged with Bob Holly that didn't wear knee pads? Because what's he done since he came back to WWE, right? He has a great entrance. He beat Seth Rollins a lot, and he beat up The Miz. And that's about it. And I'm not taking away anything from him. And in fact, I think that this probably works better for him than if he was active this whole time, because it's hard to stay hot, you know, when you have a 3-hour weekly show. But, you know, I think it's Cody's to lose. And I think if he does lose the Rumble, it would have to indicate that the only way he's touching the title is through some sort of heel turn or some sort of other twists in the story. Because when you have a real white meat, you know, good guy babyface in an era where people don't really think much of that archetype anymore, you got to tread that line very carefully. And I think one of the main ones is making Cody Rhodes look like, you know, like make it clear that he is the guy.
Mm-hmm. What about The Rock?
I think I got the answer.
Well, so let me ask you about the lack of The Rock then. Does that bother you as a fan that he apparently will not be there, or do you prefer that opening up a spot for a Sami Zayn or for a Cody Rhodes or for someone else who wouldn't have been in that spot otherwise?
I don't mind either way. truth be told. I think that it, like you said it pretty perfectly, that it is the natural goal, right, of the Roman Reigns tribal chief character. And I hope that if we don't get a match with The Rock, I don't even think it's the match we need. We need a segment that ends in The Rock acknowledging Roman. Because that's really the end goal of Roman, is having one of the greatest of all time, you know, the most, not the most famous professional wrestler, but the most famous actor that was a professional wrestler or whatever. You know, having him acknowledge Roman, like, that's the money and that's the end game. So I hope even if we don't get a match, I hope we get that moment, because that's really the peak of the tribal chief run, I feel like.
All right, before we start in with the Royal Rumble preview, let's go to the phones. And just if you're tuning in late, I'm Greg Parks, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, along with Ben Tucker, longtime PWTorch.com contributor. Getting back into the wrestling game, or wrestling analyzation game, as it were. Happy to have him along here for our Rumble preview show on Wrestling Night in America. So first phone call up is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, thanks for getting us started tonight. What's on your mind? Hello, Reverend Keith. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me, Greg? Can you hear
me?
Yes,
I can hear you.
Okay. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you, sir?
Fine. Let me turn the phone up. Listen, before we get into the discussion about the Royal Rumble, I do want to say that, you know, as the entire wrestling world continues to mourn the loss of Jay Briscoe, he was a very fine man, and he will never be forgotten. And my prayers continue to go out to his wife, Ashley, their two daughters who are getting better, and his entire family. You know, Earth has lost a fine man, and heaven has inherited a great warrior. And my prayers continue with the Briscoe family. He had atoned for his tweet that he had sent out in 13. I was in his presence on multiple occasions. He was very funny, very respectful. So, you know, may God bless him and his family, and we pray for the best.
Absolutely.
Very well
said.
I appreciate you bringing that up.
You're quite welcome. Now, moving on to the discussion of the 2023 Royal Rumble, I have a feeling that the reason why Dwayne The Rock Johnson is no longer slated, as far as we know, unless it's a major swerve, to appear at the WrestleMania 39 event, or is because it may have something to do with Vince McMahon coming back. And when you think about it, with so much going on with Dwayne, with the XFL, with him being the number one commodity in Hollywood, I'm sure his attorneys and his legal advisors have discussed the ramifications of doing business with Vince. Now, you know, with so much going on with Vince and all that he's been involved with, you know, over the past couple years, you know, with all the stuff coming out with him. And ironically, you know, he's settled financially with the Rita Chatterton case, you know. So I have a feeling that could have something to do with it, to be quite honest with you. And if so, and we may never know, Greg and Mr. Tucker. However, if that is the case, I wouldn't blame him because, you know, look at all the big wigs in WWE who have resigned since Vince has come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Dwayne has a lot to think about, and I wouldn't risk my reputation for Vince McMahon. No. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think there was a lot of conjecture about his relationship with Vince. I think it is certainly interesting timing that soon after Vince comes back, The Rock declines to do WrestleMania. I don't know if that's coincidence or what the case may be, but certainly you have to look at that. You know, there are people who actually thought the opposite, that the lack of Vince McMahon being in WWE or being a part of WWE creatively or calling the shots would actually hurt The Rock's chances of coming back, because he's, you know, seemingly maintained a good relationship with Vince throughout. Even, you know, they've had their ups and downs like every major star has had with Vince, but, you know, The Rock has seemed to have a pretty good relationship with him. So there was a school of thought that said that without Vince in charge, maybe The Rock wouldn't come back. And now, you know, because I don't know that anyone protects his brand as much as The Rock does. You know, he is very protective of how he is portrayed publicly, who he is, how people view him. And I do think it's possible, Ben, that Vince coming back in this capacity and just kind of the unknown going forward of what his role will be may have scared The Rock away. And he said, hey, look, I don't need this. I don't need this hassle. I don't need this drama. I don't need this associated with my name, especially coming off, you know, a so-so run with Black Adam, where, you know, he took a little bit of a hit there, PR-wise, for that. He may have said, look, I'm just going to stay under the radar and kind of work on the XFL stuff and not get involved in this. I mean, do you think there's a chance that Vince's return played a role in The Rock declining coming back then?
It's a very interesting point. I'm glad you asked it. It's definitely worth considering, because the timing is what I think is notable is that they already announced the segment and then they changed it. So you need to be pretty far in and pretty confident, you know, to start advertising the segment and then have it pulled. The real boring, uninteresting answer is that it's impossible for us to know. Like you mentioned, Greg, I mean, The Rock's the Rock stature, you know, he protects his image like no one else, much to his benefit. So it's really hard to get a look into what his actual thought processes are in this case. If it was a factor in him backing out, especially if it was the main factor, I don't think it'd be because of dealing with Vince. I think it would be because of the potential for the optics, you know? If WWE sells to Saudi Arabia, which, you know, is a fund that has gobbled up other sports properties that are having a much harder time selling, I think it would give The Rock some hesitation to sign his name onto it, have that happen after he signed on, and then, oh, look, you know, WWE can't get a good TV deal. You know, it would be sort of like him attaching his name, like you mentioned with Black Adam, to another, you know, underwhelming success. So I think The Rock is definitely playing it safe, whatever's happening. But I think that I don't think it's a Vince issue. I think it's a PR issue, if anything.
All right, Reverend Keith, we'll go back to you for your second question for us.
And I totally agree, Ben. I totally agree. It's a PR issue. Like you said, he has to protect his brand. Secondly, I would venture to say that Cody would be the next man up. I do not see Sami Zayn in that role. Quite naturally, we may want to journey back to WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans when Daniel Bryan became the people's champion, so to speak, pardon the pun. But I don't see the same meteoric rise in Sami Zayn like we saw in Daniel Bryan, even though Sami is popular, but it's not the exact same dynamic. You know what I mean? And I could see Sami and KO being in the tag title match against the Usos on one of those two nights, and I could see Cody Rhodes being in the main event of maybe night two of WrestleMania. But I do like your idea, Ben, of Roman Reigns defending each title each night. For example, the SmackDown title, whatever that's called now, the Universal title one night, the WWE heavyweight title the other night, you know, maybe one night against Seth, the other night against Cody, or, you know, maybe whoever wins the Elimination Chamber gets one night, and the winner of the Royal Rumble gets the other night. That's a possibility. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it would be in WWE's best interest to have Roman Reigns in as many matches at WrestleMania as they can fit him in. My only hesitation about that is how you get to splitting up the titles. It's not been teased. It's not been a part of any story. It's been, you know, those titles are together into one now. So how do you then get to the idea of splitting them up? Certainly it's not going to be an idea of Roman Reigns. You know, you could have Adam Pearce do it, but why? Like, why all of a sudden now do you have them split up the titles? I mean, you could just as easily do a women's title match in the main event of one night, and then Roman Reigns versus whomever in the main event of another night. You could do the winner of the Royal Rumble faces Roman Reigns, and you could have the Elimination Chamber. You could have one women's Elimination Chamber, and you could have a tag team Elimination Chamber, which they've done before. So you don't have to do Elimination Chamber for a shot at one of the presumed split WWE championships now. So I understand the thinking, and it's kind of been something that's picked up steam, I think, over the last couple of weeks. Creatively, Ben, I just struggled to get to that point of the why. Why break them up now? Whose idea is it? How does that even come about on screen?
So I don't disagree with either of you, actually. But I think that the sign we're getting is with the Usos and the tag titles, all of a sudden them just being defended separately. And I feel like the vibe is that they want them separate eventually. I also feel like they don't know how. And so with Usos, they're just like, hey, we're just going to defend them separately. I don't know. And just no one's paying attention to it, which I don't like. I feel like the one way they can separate them is through Cody Rhodes. Because Cody Rhodes' whole journey in WWE isn't to become the Universal Champion. It's to hold the title his dad never won, and that's the WWE title. So if you have Cody Rhodes win the Rumble and he says, no, 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 I just want that one because that's my dad's legacy. That's the one with 50, 60, a billion years of history, whatever it is. You know, I think that works. And it's still a little, you know, a little crumbly when you look at it close up. Then why wouldn't you want both?
I was going to say, Ben, because you get to the same result if you fight him for the universe, because you get both belts. I mean, you get both, you're champion of both. So I feel like that's really splitting some unnecessary hairs there.
I mean,
like,
I don't want to be
this grand champion. I only want to be half of the championship, which, you know, they're obviously not going to put it that way, but that's how it would come across, I feel like.
Yeah, but I feel like we're going to run into this issue either way, right? I don't know, because I feel like both USA and Fox realistically want to have their own champion. You know, and I mean, USA has been getting the shaft as it is by having their champion just be on Fox every week. But when you take the title off Roman, and I feel like everyone can admit this is Roman's run, right? You know, the Austin 98, the Hogan 84 to 88. Like, this is it for Roman. He will win the title in the future, but none are ever going to be like this. This is his run. After he loses the belt, I don't know that you have someone who's strong enough to carry both brands as champion. You know? And I mean, you could have it where a Cody Rhodes wins, And then he goes, well, we got to give more opportunities, so I'll defend the belts twice as much, but I'll defend them individually. And that's how you do it. I guess that would probably be the most realistic way to go about it, now I'm saying it out loud. But I do think that I guess if it's going to happen, it needs to be a babyface who does it, because otherwise it really doesn't make a ton of sense. But, you know, WWE's done stranger, right? But like I just said, they're randomly defending the tag title separately now, and no one's saying a word about it. So I wouldn't put it past them.
And, of course, WWE could have avoided this whole situation had they not combined the belts, which I was never a fan of in the first place. But I will not take this time to gloat. Instead, I will go to Reverend Keith for your third and final question for us tonight.
I totally agree with both of you guys. I do venture to say that both Fox and USA desire as well as need a heavyweight champion on both of its shows. So I think that's why they are splitting both the heavyweight belt and the tag titles. Going into my third point, gentlemen, I like the team of Drew and Sheamus, and I'm hoping that they will be one of the tag team champions coming out of this split, simply because on the other side, I don't see Judgment Day winning tomorrow night in Philadelphia. I think that's just a ratings grab right there, and it's kind of unusual to see two heel factions going at it. So I think they just put that together, you know, just to build the show, which will be a fantastic show. But I don't see Judgment Day, especially with Dominic in the match, you know. But I could see Sheamus and Drew perhaps defeating the Usos down the line. And then maybe, as I already discussed, Sammy and KO either at the Montreal show at Elimination Chamber or WrestleMania, if they want to drag it out till March or April, shall I say, and have them win the other titles. And then perhaps have the Usos get them back. You know, the Usos aren't going anywhere. After a near two-year reign, I don't see them, even if they should lose both, I don't see them remaining titleless for a while. What are your thoughts on the tag team title split? Thank you for taking my call. Ben, this is my first time talking to you, but you and I think like-minded, so I hope to speak with you again. Greg, it's always good talking to you, brother. May you guys have a blessed week.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
it,
Reverend Keith. Thank you. I'm not convinced that the Usos, even if they do split the titles, will end up titleless by the end of it. I think part of it is it has a lot to do with Roman Reigns, because as Roman Reigns goes, so go the Usos. You know, Roman Reigns got these titles, and then all of a sudden the Usos got the titles to really strengthen the Bloodline group. And if they want to tell a story of, you know, the Bloodline becoming, you know, peck and pause, then I guess they could all lose their titles and you know, that sort of thing. So I do think Drew and Sheamus is a strong team, has developed into a strong team. I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn is really intriguing for when Sami Zayn breaks away from the Bloodline. You know, that is the consolation prize, I guess, for fans who want Sami Zayn to be the guy to take down Roman Reigns. Again, I don't know that that's how WWE sees Sami Zayn. I think it's probably more likely they see him as a tag team wrestler with Kevin Owens beating the Usos. I think that would end up being Sammy's ultimate come up against the Bloodline, because remember, I mean, he's got beef with Jimmy. I mean, he was so late to accept Sami Zayn, and they've been beefing for a while. So I think that could be the course of action. But, I mean, how do you see if they do split up the titles and, you know, the Usos lose one of them within the next few months, say, by the time WrestleMania rolls around, do you see them losing one of them? Do you see them losing both of them? How do you see that playing out?
The fact they're defending them separately suggests they're going to lose one separately, and they would lose it sooner than later. A lot of people have theorized Judgment Day is taking them, and I just don't see it. Because I don't know why you would give the satisfaction of your top heel tag team since, God, I mean, what was the last, like, pure heel tag team that, like, stayed heel and got super popular? Because, I mean, the New Day, you know, turned into good guys relatively quickly. I mean, you have to go back to, well, like the Dudley Boys, you know? I mean, long time ago. So I don't see why you'd have their first loss of a title be to, you know, be to another heel team. I feel like the issue with Sami Zayn winning the tag titles, and others have said it, so I'm not saying anything new, but the big issue is that since Survivor Series when Jay accepted Sami into the bloodline, it's transitioned into a Sami and Roman story. It's not really about the Usos anymore because he's cool with them all now. The only one he's having issues with is Roman. So they can heat it back up, fine. But the issue is that their weekly TV is a story of Roman and Sami. And so I'm fine with them ending up against the Usos as long as it makes sense and feels satisfying. But they're running dangerously close to, you know, that Daniel Bryan 2014 vibe where it's like, oh, okay, well, I mean, you know, like he's been feuding with, or Daniel Bryan 2014, where it's like, you know, he's been feuding with the champ, or he's been in a story with the champ for the last like 6 months, and there's not a resolution. Well, obviously, you know, this guy's in the title program with him for Mania. I think that's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has kind of gone more into a Sami Roman concentrated storyline. So anything less than Sami doing something with Reigns in the ring in a one-on-one situation, I think would be disappointing to a lot of people. Let's take a look at the Rumble card as it stands. Obviously, we have Raw and SmackDown between now and the Rumble where the Royal Rumble matches will fill out. We may get another undercard match or two as well. So let's start with the undercard first. We have Bray Wyatt versus LA Knight in a Mountain Dew pitch black match. First of all, let me just say that I enjoy the Mountain Dew pitch black flavor, so I'm not going to make fun of this match. No, I'm kidding. I do like the flavor, but we're going to make fun of the match, I'm sure. This is cross-promoting run amok, as we've seen before. Nothing new there. Seems to have gone into overdrive in the Nick Khan era of WWE. But, I, you know, the pitch black match, I think, probably fits Bray Wyatt. What doesn't fit Bray Wyatt is having a match sponsored by Mountain Dew. I don't see that fitting his character at all, but hey, you take what you can get. So we don't know what this match is going to be. I think LA Knight has even admitted on television that he doesn't know what this match is going to be. If it's anything but these two wrestling in the dark, I think it's false advertising, and that could create a whole fun situation as well. I mean, think about, you know, LA Knight versus Bray Wyatt in a regular match, maybe a star and a half, 2 stars. But if it's in a match where you can't see, like, it can't disappoint, right? So I guess there's that too. What are you expecting, Ben, from this Mountain Dew pitch black match between Bray Wyatt and LA Knight?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know. I love Bray Wyatt. I think he's a generational talent. I think that he is part of the cadre of wrestlers this generation, like Kenny Omega, you know, like Matt Hardy to an extent, like the Young Bucks, who are really trying to push the medium of pro wrestling in directions it wasn't intended for, with positive results. And we've seen a lot of his amazing output through the years, you know, his Firefly Funhouse match with John Cena, right, in many ways is like his ultimate, I feel like, expression of trying to push the genre forward. With that said, I feel like his return was amazing. I really wanted to see more. I was happy that he was moving in a new direction as Bray Wyatt. And I was ready for the spooky stuff, but like in a new way. And as each week goes on, I feel like we're going backwards. And I know that a lot of that's for story purposes, right? Bray is now starting to revel in who he is because of this Uncle Howdy masked man. And so he's going back to the funhouse. He's going back to the chair and the rocking. But I don't want to see that, I guess. I think what's interesting about Bray Wyatt are the ideas. And maybe that's too of an ethereal thing, but I like what he can introduce as new, because I feel like each time he's iterated off of something, it's gotten wilder and cooler. And from his last promo segment on SmackDown, where he was in the funhouse, it seems like he's just talking about bringing the Fiend back. And I like the Fiend. I think the Fiend is fine. I like the Fiend a lot more than a lot of people. But I feel like we've done the Fiend. And maybe that's me sounding kind of complainy, but like, I feel like with the White Rabbit hints and the Wyatt 6 iconography, I thought it was going to end up being something more. And right now we've had 3 months of build to, oh, the clown's coming back. It's okay. But it feels shockingly underwhelming for a Bray Wyatt that doesn't have the supposed handcuffs that he had when Vince was in charge. So I am going to remain cautiously optimistic for this match. Whatever happens, Bray Wyatt's going to win. If I had to guess, I feel like this will be a heavily cinematic match in some way, or it'll be some sort of brawl, something to, you know, do as little wrestling as possible. But, you know, the actual how we get there, I'm in the dark. My mind is pitch black.
Pun intended, of course. yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know any other way to say it. I just find it. I'm going to be really surprised if people walk out of this as a whole, and because I think there's already some skepticism from a lot of people about what Bray Wyatt is bringing to the table this time around. So I just feel like the way this match is being set up, I'm going to be surprised if a lot of people love it. And it could be cinematic, and there are some examples of cinematic matches that people have really enjoyed. So if they do it like that, who knows? Maybe it will be a success. But
yeah, I think the biggest thing from this is that, you know, we've heard rumors, right, that Vince was a big source of Wyatt's frustrations and inconsistent booking. I feel like this is the match. This is the litmus test of like, okay, are we on board or are we not? Like, because this should be unfettered Bray Wyatt. So I feel like, you know, this is the real put up or shut up time. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. That's a good point. Sort of adjacent to the Bray Wyatt match is Bianca Belair versus Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship. We've seen Alexa Bliss being more and more hypnotized, phased, whatever word you want to use to describe how she's been acting since Bray Wyatt has returned and with the Wyatt teases appearing on Raw. Do you believe this is something they sort of had to address? It was very easy. I mean, easy is my word, I guess, when Bray Wyatt was let go and they brought Alexa Bliss back, it was kind of easy to get her away from that and back to the Alexa Bliss of old. Do you feel that they kind of had to address that relationship again when Bray Wyatt was rehired? or do you think they really could have just had Alexa Bliss go her separate way and not really? I mean, they are on separate brands. So do you think they really needed to address it and have her sort of back into the fold, as it were? You know, Bray Wyatt has not mentioned anything about her on SmackDown. I mean, all of these things are happening on Raw to her, and, you know, we're assuming it's Bray Wyatt doing it, but he hasn't even referred to it. So your take on Alexa Bliss seemingly being taken over once again by Bray Wyatt.
This sounds a little harsh. Alexa Bliss with all the Bray Wyatt stuff for me is you know, like Yoko Ono, like with the Beatles, where it's like, can you just like stop? Like I'm sure that she loves it and like Bray and everyone love working with her, but Bray is like psychological thriller. And Alexa Bliss is like, you know, God, I don't know, like the Lawnmower Man, you know, it's just different vibes. I don't, for me, her stuff doesn't click at all. But I think they could have easily gotten away with just never mentioning it again. You know, I'm sure that after Big Boss Man, you know, shoved Al Snow's dog down his throat, I'm sure they tagged together on Sunday Night Heat sometime. I mean, it's wrestling, right? No one ever follows the 7-year rule. So they could have gone away with it. I'm sure they have an in-game in there. I'm sure Alexa's excited to do it. Not my forte, but, you know, I'm not the target audience for this. You know, I go to shows. I mean, there's thousands of Lily dolls around me. I mean, children go crazy when they see her. So, like, who am I to tell them that it's not good and that I'm not interested in it, right? Because, you know, the show doesn't need to revolve around me. I don't see Alexa winning on Sunday. I think Bianca feels like a big-time player, and I don't think Alexa's felt like a big-time player, you know, since she dropped the title to Ronda, which was what, like 4 years ago now, longer. I'm excited to see what they do, and I really want to see Bianca, since she's like three times Alexa's size. I just want to see her like throw her around the stadium. That's really what I want from this match.
Fair enough. The other match, the other non-Rumble match that's being advertised right now is Roman Reigns against Kevin Owens for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. This is the second go-around now for Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns. Owens fought Reigns earlier in this very reign and was unsuccessful. They had a last-man-standing match that Reigns won under nefarious circumstances. So I guess if anyone deserved another bite at the apple, it was Kevin Owens. And they had Owens attack Reigns and put him through a table this past week on SmackDown. The focus, as was mentioned in Reverend Keith's call, has been on Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns and the drama there. Kevin Owens almost seems like a backdrop to this. He's a tool in this Sami-Roman Reigns story. Have they done enough to make Kevin Owens seem like he can actually defeat Roman Reigns, or does that not even matter? Is it all about what does Sami do during this match? And is that okay if that's all it's about?
This match almost reads to me as like the bathroom break between Rumbles. And I know it's not because there's Roman in it, but it feels like such a foregone conclusion. But I don't think it's the Sami Zayn effect that renders, you know, the outcome of the match moot. I think it's the fact that everyone's generally getting the feeling that Roman's reign, pun actually unintended that time, is coming to an end. And I feel like this is just, hey, if you guys want to see Roman defend the title during his title reign, like, you know, come on to the Alamo Dome. You know, I think that's the biggest selling point right now is Roman himself. I think it'll be a good match. You know, this is their third Universal title match at a Rumble. The other two were great. Gosh, their third Universal title match at the Rumble. Wow, man, really? Huh. And hey, they're 1-1. So, you know, Owens won the last time.
The rubber match.
I feel like the way that they could have really made this match feel more special and also tie a nice knot around, you know, one of Roman's older sort of, not flubs, but like missteps in his reign, would have been throwing Seth Rollins into the mix. Because him and KO have a relationship already. Roman never beat him for the title, so that's still hanging there. I get that you probably want Seth to help pad out the Rumble, especially with Cody Rhodes being in there. But I think that I think that would have helped really zhuzh it up a bit, but it'd also be good.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We'll talk about the two Rumble matches in just a moment, but let's go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Hit us with the first of your three-pack of questions for us.
Thank you, Greg. It's an honor to be back here on Wrestling Night in America. My first question for you,
good to have you
this week is, if you have listened to it, what was your opinion of WWE's soul CEO, Nick Khan's interview on the Bill Simmons podcast?
I did not listen to it, but I saw enough people commenting about it on Twitter, and I saw enough quotes from Nick Khan from that interview to definitely give me a lesser impression of him than when I went in. You know, kind of sloughing off Vince's misdeeds and things like that as no big deal. And, you know, he's that smooth talker, that slick back hair kind of businessman that people have a negative stereotype of, that prioritize profits over people and over things like that. And, it was definitely like it doesn't make you any more comfortable about the company. I think a lot of people seeing Vince McMahon come back, that was a very disappointing outcome for a lot of people who kind of thought that with Vince out, the company was going to be different. And now you have Vince back and you have Nick Khan, who remains in a very powerful position within the company, making some, you know, downright abhorrent comments at times, is doubly disappointing. So Ben, I don't know if you had a chance to listen or saw the comments that Nick Khan made on that podcast.
Yeah. So, during my, wrestling analysis sabbatical, I worked in talent management, which is where Nick Khan came from. He was like the head of CAA or something, which is one of the biggest talent agencies. And that is the culture, you know. Nick Khan is not a stereotype. Like, Nick Khan is what that type of industry breeds, you know. He's the type of person where the stereotypes come from, you know, that mm-hmm. fosters those toxic work culture environments. And, you know, there's thousands of people like him, right? You know, I mean, if you want to get into mm-hmm. a philosophical discussion about, you know, the merits and failings of capitalism, you know, this really isn't the time or the place. But with Nick Khan, it's, you know, he sounds bald-faced about a lot of things he says about Vince because nothing's going to be done about it, right? Mm-hmm. And he knows that, and that's what they're banking on. You know, Nick Khan's job is to help get this company ready for sale, and he's doing that. And I don't think he's looking at it from a moral standpoint. I think he's looking at it from a purely banal dystopian business perspective, you know, which is, I want the money that I get if this company sells. And so I'm going to say what I can to make people not be upset about Vince McMahon or pay lip service to it, because it doesn't matter what those people think, because they're not the people who are going to buy the company. You know, it's not a fluffy answer, but, you know, it is what it is.
Basically, go out there and say, hey, it's not a big deal. Like, it's business as usual, to give the impression to potential buyers and investors that, you know, Vince being back is not a big deal. Because that's, you know, everybody's reaction was, whoa, like, this guy's back. And you know, Vince's whole defense was, I shouldn't have left because it was all going to blow over. And Nick Khan is the one trying to make sure it blows over in this interview for the purposes that you laid out, Ben. So let's go to Kylan for your second question for us.
Are either you or Ben any more convinced that Vince McMahon does not currently have a role in WWE creative at this time? For me, I think I can safely say he's not there because Michael Cole is still enthusiastically calling SmackDown like a wrestling show, and we're not hearing him be all pissed like he's scared to death somebody's going to be yelling at him.
Yeah, I don't think he is. I know that there's conspiracy theories out there that Vince is pulling the strings now that he's back, pulling the strings creatively. Hey, that might happen eventually, and I wouldn't rule it out. I don't think it's happening right now. I'm not sure legally what could be done if Vince is, you know, I'm not sure how legal it is for him to do that, to just come back and take over creative without making that clear. Like, that, I don't know what the legalities of that is or are for a publicly traded company, but I would think that Vince knows that his every move is being watched, because there are lawsuits that have been filed for his return. So he should be extra careful about where his fingerprints end up within the company. And so, you know, look, Triple H is his son-in-law. Vince is still a very powerful person within the WWE ecosystem. Am I foolish enough to think that Triple H doesn't talk to Vince about this stuff? No, of course not. But is he, you know, ripping up the Raw script 3 hours before they go on air and rewriting it? No, I don't think that's the case either. Again, could happen, but do I think it's happening now? No. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. We would know, really. It's, you know, and who am I to say? But I feel like, considering the loose lips in the industry right now, we would absolutely know, unequivocally, 100%, given the outcry of negative sentiment when it was announced just that Vince was coming back in general. But I love
obviously,
your point about Michael
obviously
Cole.
There are
Michael
leaks,
Cole is like...
You know, Ben, obviously there are leaks within WWE. Someone's leaking all this stuff to the Wall Street Journal. Certainly if Vince were back in doing creative, that would be leaked somewhere as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Kylan, your final question for us tonight.
And my final question, as ridiculous as this may seem, could either you or Ben eventually see a point where either Shane or Stephanie McMahon returns in any capacity, and what may that be?
I would see Stephanie returning before Shane. I don't, because Stephanie, with Stephanie, you can have her be an on-air performer or work behind the scenes. I think Shane's days of working behind the scenes in WWE are over. I don't think Vince wants him there. Even, you know, during his last run, he was strictly an on-air performer. He wasn't doing anything management-wise. So I don't think Shane would do that. And, you know, his cachet as a performer, he still got the McMahon name, but now that name is further sullied by the things that have come out dealing with Vince since Shane was last in WWE. So I'm not sure that name has the cachet it once did either. So I'm pretty solid the fact that Stephanie would be back in some capacity, either on air or behind the scenes, before Shane does. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think the real question is, like, when do we see them back, right? And you know, I think we will see them back on TV no matter what happens to the company. But, like, in what way? I don't know, because it really seems like Vince is trying to muscle them out. And you know, there's a longer discussion to be had there. But I agree with you, Greg. I feel like we'll see Stephanie come back first. Unless this company sale is so ugly that it's years, you know, between seeing her and Triple H on TV, in which case I'm sure Shane would stick around. But that's really the only thing I can probably add without trying to armchair doctor it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the other thing, too. You know, the WWE at this point is going to exist with Vince McMahon in charge, in which Stephanie obviously wants no part of that, or with a conglomerate buying WWE, in which they'll install their own people in management that they want, and there may not be a place for Stephanie there. I mean, she was in WWE because she was part of the family. And once that business no longer is a part of the family, she may not have a place in it anymore. You know, I think there is something to be said for having the institutional knowledge of how a very unique company that is the pro wrestling industry is run. So I think she could be valuable. But it's hard for me to even see her coming back in any capacity behind the scenes, knowing that those seem to be the only two outcomes left for WWE as a business right now. And I don't see a place for her in either one of those. Kylan, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate you calling in, and look forward to hearing from you again soon.
You're welcome, Greg. Talk to you soon.
All right. Let's go to the Rumble matches, Ben, and we'll talk about those. We have the men's Rumble match. Right now we have 15 participants announced. Kofi Kingston, Santos Escobar, Ricochet. We have Seth Rollins, Austin Theory, Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin, Rey Mysterio, Gunther, Cody Rhodes, Omos, Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Braun Strowman, and Karrion Kross. So we have a couple guys. Cody Rhodes, we talked about, is a possibility to win the match. Drew McIntyre, I think, you know, he's been more focused in the tag team with Sheamus. He's been such a babyface star for WWE over the last few years. I don't think you can discount him out of hand. And there could be others. Certainly we'll have some surprises. I would expect about 20 to 25 wrestlers to be announced by the time the Royal Rumble comes around, leading a couple spots for returns. But so far, you know, a pretty strong lineup. This is going to end up being a pretty strong lineup for the men's Rumble. Not to say that, you know, everybody has a chance of winning. You know, I would consider Gunther a part of this strong lineup, but obviously he's not going to win. So is it Cody Rhodes or bust here for you, Ben, in this? Because I agree. I think Cody should win this, especially with The Rock out of the picture. Cody Rhodes should win this. I think he should go on to WrestleMania, face Roman Reigns. They do have a storyline there with family. You know, Cody has built himself as part of the, you know, first family of wrestling. That's been a big part of his character. Obviously, his father, Dusty Rhodes, has been a big part of who he is, and he's been very public about that. And then you have Roman Reigns, which represents the Samoan dynasty and his family, and his whole storyline has been about being the head of his table. So there even is a storyline that they can exploit there outside of just, you know, this being the biggest match they could run with at this point.
It's Cody Rhodes or bust, you know. I think the biggest argument against Cody Rhodes is that Roman Reigns has been feuding with tons of people during his two-year reign, and he hasn't gone through the story beats on all of them, right? Seth Rollins is still hanging there. That could be a main event. Sami Zayn he's still interacting with. But, you know, especially when you're talking about legacy, right? Like, I feel like WWE at this time right now, you know, their legacy is truly, like, at the center of all the drama right now and everything. Yeah, I feel like WrestleMania over the last several years, especially in the Nick Khan era, has really transitioned into who are the biggest stars. And it's led to some really redundant main events like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. Because, you know, it's like, how many times can you say it? But to them, that was the biggest match. And if you ask what the biggest match is, it's Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. You know, not to mention these guys have worked with each other before. By all accounts, they've had good things to say about each other. Cody Rhodes is never going to be hotter. I think anything less just wouldn't hit as right, unless you're doing Sami Zayn. But I just don't, as much as I want to see Sami Zayn be world champion, I just don't think that that's the guy they're going to prop up when selling the company and being like, here is our world champion, Sami Zayn, right? Like, I'd respond well to it, but, you know, Cody Rhodes, right? I think conversely, you look at Seth, who's lost like 75% of his matches on TV this year, where it's like, yeah, the idea of it's great, conversely, compared to Sami, but in practice, it's like, well, whereas Sami's actually been protected. For me, all roads lead to Rhodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Sami would be interesting because there would be a lot of, you know, and it really all depends on what happens this week on TV. You know, what is the mindset that Sami Zayn goes into the Royal Rumble with? Where is his standing in the bloodline after the trial on Monday?
I mean, we don't even know if he's going to be in the Rumble, to be fair.
Right. He's not one of the announced participants. He could end up being a surprise and end up winning it, depending on how the story develops this week. You know, if the bloodline kind of tosses him out with yesterday's garbage, he could end up winning the Rumble, and all of a sudden they start groveling back to him. Like, you know, you got this title shot, but you wouldn't use it against Roman Reigns, would you? You know, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't challenge
right. The
head of the table. And they could make life very difficult for Sami Zayn if he does choose to use it, which obviously he would. So I do think there are some really interesting possibilities. I'm just not sold that WWE sees Sami on that level. Even after all they've been through with the bloodline, and even as he's been really the focus of this story, and they've run with him, because this was not, I don't think, the intention from the outset when Sami got involved. But WWE has called an audible, and they've been able to adjust and say, hey, the fans want more Sami, let's give them more Sami. So credit to them for that. But I still don't know if it's WrestleMania main event level is where they see him. So I think those are two of probably right now, as we sit here, the strongest contenders to win outside of a surprise John Cena appearance or something like that. So that's going to be interesting. The Women's Royal Rumble, right now we only have 7 participants announced ahead of time. The women's roster is a lot more limited than the men's, so you anticipate everybody who's on the main roster getting in, so they may not feel the need to announce everybody ahead of time. We also get a lot more surprises, legends from the past in these Women's Royal Rumbles as well. Right now it's Liv Morgan, Candice LeRae, Rhea Ripley, Raquel Rodriguez, Shayna Baszler, Zelina Vega, and Emma, 7 women so far announced. So our women's champions are Charlotte Flair, who recently returned on SmackDown and defeated Ronda Rousey, and we have Bianca Belair. So those are the two that you would imagine not being in the Women's Royal Rumble. I think, Ben, this one's a lot more up for grabs. You've got Becky Lynch, who's out there. You've got Ronda Rousey, who could want revenge over Charlotte. She's out there. You know, you've got Shayna Baszler, who's, you know, probably not. Maybe if Ronda was still champion, Shayna Baszler would be interesting. You know, you've got Rhea Ripley, who I think is really primed for a run on top, and I would love to see her take this match. Again, not, it's sort of like Sami Zayn, not convinced WWE sees her in that position yet, but I think she could get there at some point. So what's your feeling on the Women's Rumble? Do you see it as more wide open, and do you have a feeling of who the winner might be here?
So I think that the two women's matches for Mania are going to be Becky and Charlotte and Rhea and Bianca, just because I don't see anyone else on the roster who can match Charlotte. And it'd be a nice bookend from Becky's The Man Run. It's sort of the match that we kind of wanted maybe not the one we wanted, which would have been Becky and Ronda, but, you know, still sort of closes the book on Becky Lynch's The Man Run. And then I think Rhea's just been eating everyone's lunch, you know, when it comes to the Raw side. Between those two, I feel like Rhea could win in the chamber and look like a monster. And I feel like you want a real positive win from the Rumble. And I think if Becky wins, she would be the first ever two-time winner of the Rumble, for the Women's Rumble, which I think would be a big accomplishment for her. So, and on top of that, there's no SmackDown title representation on the show. So I feel like that sort of sets it up for someone to win to challenge Charlotte, even though both Rhea and Becky right now are currently on the Raw roster. So I don't know. A lot of wheels spinning in my head, but I see Becky probably being the one to win it. She's, you know, been present on TV every week, but she hasn't been having a lot of standout wins. She seems to be right in that place to take it. My hotter take at this Rumble, I don't think this Rumble should be happening. I love that we get, you know, like a men's of one match, a women's of the other match. But I think the last, you know, this is coming up on, this will be the sixth year, I think, of women's Rumbles and men's Rumbles in the same night. And I think it's kind of diluting it in a bit in the same way that, like, Hell in a Cell did when they gave it a named pay-per-view. And I'm sure that's a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I feel like when you have a roster that's as static as the women's that needs to be filled with the same guest spots every year, I think it does more harm than good. Because coming into, yeah, I mean, last year's Women's Rumble was fine, but I cannot for the life of me differentiate the different years of the Women's Rumble outside of very few spots. And so, if they gave the women like the chamber every year and the men got the Rumble, I think that'd be great. I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but but I think it'll be, you know, because the Rumble used to be there is the Rumble, that's it. Now it's there's two of them, and so we need to make sure they're different. And I think that the fact you get two Rumbles in one night, which sounds great, but I think when you get those like 10 to 20 people coming out, I really think it's sort of like, okay. And I think it makes people a lot angstier towards the Rumbles in general.
You can send all of your hate mail to Ben on Twitter at BTuckerTorch. So if
you got it.
If you, for his hot take there. But yeah, I think, you know, the Women's Rumble, for me, the more Rumbles, the better. I think there's going to be enough different this year with some new women. And I do hope that they bring back some different legends. And, you know, I wouldn't even be against them incorporating some of the top NXT acts, the Cora Jade, you know, someone like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Sol Ruka in here, despite her not being really, you know, still being very green and not having a lot of actual matches under her belt. NXT likes her. She's got the athleticism. She can pull off some interesting Kofi Kingston like stuff maybe in this Rumble, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that. I'd like to see that as well in this one. So that is the Rumble. Just a reminder that we will be going on the air next Saturday night after the Royal Rumble goes off the air. So tune in then. We won't have a show Sunday. Instead, we'll be taking your phone calls and emails about the Royal Rumble and your reaction to it. Really excited about it. It's one of the biggest WWE events of the year, and it's one of my favorites. So I'm really excited about hosting that show next week. Let's go back for a final phone call of the evening. It is the 814 area code, Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan usually is the first caller. Tonight, he's the caboose. So, Ryan, thanks for joining us. And what's the first question for us tonight?
My first question is, you talked about possible legends being in the Rumble. Can you give one pick that would be most likely for the ladies and the men's Rumble?
Let's see. For the women, it's got to be Kelly Kelly. I think she's been in every Rumble, so that's my most likely legend, even though I feel like referring
woman.
To her as a legend is... Yes, I feel like referring to her as a legend is very generous. For the men, what legend? See, that varies more year to year, so I'm not really sure. Boy, you know, I'm tempted to say JBL because of Baron Corbin's, you know, his involvement with Baron Corbin's career. So... But, man, even at this point, I'm not sure what JBL could offer in a Rumble other than just a guest spot. Ben, why don't you take it while I'm thinking of the last one?
Yeah,
men,
I gotcha.
Men and women for you. Okay.
For the women's Rumble, my standout from, I don't know if it was a year ago or maybe two or so years ago, was Ivory. And she was barely in, but had a lot of fun. With that, I'd really like to see her back. And then for the men, I'd really like to see Carlito come in. I know that he did the 2021 Rumble, but there was no one to react for it. And also, you know, he sort of couldn't do the Apple thing because, you know, it's COVID. So I'd like to see him come out and, you know, get his flowers from the crowd. So those are my picks.
Well, I mean, you know, I look at who WWE is advertising for the Raw 30 on Raw Monday night, and maybe trying to pick somebody from there, maybe like the Godfather. Maybe one of the legends does an angle on Raw that leads to them being in the Royal Rumble match, and of course just so happening to be in there with whoever they did the angle with. So, you know, I think if I remember correctly, the Godfather was advertised, Ted DiBiase, IRS. I don't know. Those all seem like long shots to me, but it could be somebody from, you know, they got the Road Dogg in there. I think X-Pac. I think he's a guy who I'm not sure if he's he may have done one Rumble as a legend, but I know he hasn't done many. He's not one of the ones they bring back every year. So I'm going to go, X-Pac's going to be the one that, I guess it's more hopeful than not, but, you know, with Triple H in charge, with him appearing on Raw 30 with DX and stuff like that, I'll go X-Pac for you. X-Pac and Kelly Kelly. So, Ryan, we'll go back to you for your second question for us.
My second question is, I recently predicted on the other podcast that Keon James and Fallon Henley would win the NXT Tag Team Champions. I was told that wasn't a very bold prediction. Do you agree with that statement that that's not a bold prediction?
I mean, we've seen wrestlers who can't get along team together before. I don't know what the context would be of why they would team together. Maybe something to do with Fallon Henley's family bar or something like that. Maybe it could lead to them somehow teaming together. But you know what, Ryan? I'm not a very bold person with my predictions either. So I'm going to side with you on that. I'm going to say that is a bold prediction. I'm going to go with you because I feel your pain. I've been told my predictions aren't very bold either. Ben, Kiana James and Fallon Henley in NXT, potentially being tag team champions. Is that a bold prediction?
Well, I mean, anything can happen in the WWE, right?
So we've been told.
It seems like out of the playbook for me. So, you know, I would not be surprised in the least if that happened.
Ooh. So one for a bold prediction, Ryan, and one against. So I'm not sure if that helps you or anything, but I'm on your side. Your final question for us tonight.
My final question is, what do you put the odds are that Gunther will be a runner-up in the Rumble this year, not winning it, but being the guy that gets thrown out?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, I don't think he's a realistic option to win, so I would definitely say he's more likely to be a runner-up. I think he has a very strong showing. Whether that means he's a runner-up or not, I don't know. I'll put the odds of him being runner-up at 15%. So I think it's there's a good shot. I think, he's a candidate. But I think either way, Ben, he's going to have a really strong showing in the Rumble, throw a lot of guys out.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was like the guy who controls the first half of the Rumble and then gets thrown out by whoever's going to win. I think Gunther's pretty great. Honestly, whoever wins, if it's going to be a good guy, it probably is, you're going to want him up against, a guy that people aren't really going to cheer and, someone who's big and nasty and is hard to get out. I wasn't even thinking about Gunther, but you mentioned it. I think that's pretty possible. I might just make that my pick for runner-up is Gunther. I like it.
Excellent. All right, Ryan, thank you for the phone call this evening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. Ben, it has been a pleasure having you on Wrestling Night in America again. We will have to do this again soon. Enjoyed catching up. Enjoyed our 5-year reunion since the last time we talked.
That's
here
right.
On Wrestling Night in America. I know that you're also interested in getting back writing for The Torch. I'm not sure if you've done that yet, but you can feel free to plug anything you'd like to plug here at this point.
Yeah, well, you can find me on Twitter at BTuckerTorch. My main project right now, I co-host a separate podcast, Fourth Time's the Charm, where niche is neat. We talk all things niche, so, of course, that includes pro wrestling. Talks about, metal music, niche movies you've never heard of. Our upcoming episode this next week, we're talking about The Granny, which is it's an evil serial killer, demonic granny who learned how to fight people by watching Sting and Steve Austin in 1994 WCW with Tony Schiavone on the call. So it's a 1995 movie. It's a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about it this upcoming Thursday. And you can follow that on Instagram at Fourth Times the Charm Official.
I think that may be the next phase of the Bray Wyatt storyline, too. I think that may be the next character he introduces. So definitely check that out.
There we go.
All right, Ben, thanks so much for being here, and we'll have you on again soon to talk wrestling.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And don't forget, next Saturday night after the Royal Rumble, we'll go on the air right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. It's been great talking to everybody. Thank you for listening. I'm Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And it's been a great Sunday with you, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.